Hello to another episode of the End Zone Podcast with me, Trajan Watkins, alone as the host this time, amid some sort of midweek action here on the End Zone Podcast. Just wanted to hop on here, do a little couple mini things that we haven't been able to do over the past, what, 4 or 5 months because me and Eric have both been so busy during the week. So I found some time this week, and I'm going to try to get some or find some more time, excuse me, over the next couple of weeks to preview what three of the most intriguing divisions that me and Eric thought were pretty interesting. So we'll start out this week with the AFC South, as that's the division I'm most familiar with. Cover the team here in Tennessee and Nashville, Tennessee Titans. So it's the team I'm most familiar with. So I wanted to bring on a guest today. I've known him for a bit. I don't know him as much as everybody else I brought on the podcast, but he's still a real nice and smart guy and football mind. If you're a Titans fan, you've seen him on Twitter, with his various detailed tweets about the cap and everything that involves the Titans and around the league. So Mike Herndon of Broadway Sports Media, how are you today?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. I'm sitting here hearing myself talk, and I don't have any energy. It's cloudy out here. It was wet, it's rainy, it's humid. So I need to bring some more energy. I need to bring my usual self that I'm always on the podcast. Eric will probably right now be telling me to bring some more energy. What are you doing? So I'll bring some more
There you
energy on
go.
this podcast.
We got Julio. Let's go.
Yeah, Titans got Julio Jones, man. So that's one of the things we'll get into. Actually, most definitely a little bit later. But today I wanted to get Mike on here to preview, like I said, the AFC South. Maybe review a little bit of the offseason for all four teams across the AFC South. And at the end, we'll probably get into some AFC South power rankings initially, before training camp, maybe before mini camp. I don't know which of those teams have started mini camp yet, or if they have already. So, we'll get into some power rankings at the end of the show, and then we can get up on out here. So, Mike, I wanted to start out with, just some rapid fire discussion. About the offseason moves that all four teams in the AFC South made. Jacksonville had the most weirdly intriguing offseason. Indianapolis, Eli bringing Carson Wentz. Houston, it's a mess down there. That's all we could get into right now. And Titans, as Mike just alluded to, and if you've been following the coverage this past week, the Titans got Julio Jones. So I want to start out with Houston because we need to get that mess out the way. Aside from the whole Deshaun Watson stuff, the Texans have done a weird sort of, or have gone down a weird path in their offseason. They've added a whole bunch of veterans to that football team. Veterans that have never played for the Texans before, and veterans that are maybe on the wrong side of 30 or nearing the wrong side of 30. So, Mike, what are your initial thoughts about the Texans offseason so far?
I mean, it just seems like they kind of almost don't have a plan, right? I know the Deshaun Watson thing is hanging over all of this, right? It's tough. I understand they're in a tough spot because if he, ends up getting traded, that's kind of a, death blow to their team for at least a couple years, and they'll probably be further into rebuilding mode. But I mean, I guess if he does end up playing somehow. I don't see it happening, frankly, but if he does end up playing, they still have enough pieces that they could be theoretically competitive. I don't think they'll be good. The defense is going to be awful, in my opinion. I mean, they were bad last year. I mean, probably if not the worst defense in the NFL, they were bottom three. And they lost J.J. Watt, who was really probably one of maybe two or three redeemable pieces of that unit. So the defense is going to be a train wreck. The offense, they got like a ton of running backs. They got David Johnson, Philip Lindsay, Mark Ingram, Rex Burkhead. Like, it's just a random group of running backs. They got a ton of quarterbacks, I guess preparing for the eventual situation with Deshaun Watson possibly not being on the field, or maybe, you know, probably not being on the field for them this year, with, you know, Tyrod Taylor and Jeff Driskel, and they drafted Davis Mills. And I feel like the offense, there's still some pieces that you like, right? I mean, Laramie Tunsil's a good tackle. Mm-hmm. Marcus Cannon, who they traded from New England, is a good player. You know, they've got Brandon Cooks, who's good when he's healthy. They've got they still have Randall Cobb, who was okay last year. There's some parts and pieces that you still have to deal with on the offense. But if Deshaun Watson isn't the trigger man, then I don't think the parts and pieces are enough to lift Tyrod Taylor into being, you know, anywhere close to good enough to carry this team. Even, I mean, Deshaun Watson played out of his mind last year and they finished 4-12. So Tyrod Taylor's just not going to drag this group to more than four wins. So I don't know. It seems to me like they're headed for a first overall pick in 2022 to me.
Yeah. That's probably the best case scenario for them right now, because like that defense is horrible. I mean, they traded JJ Watt, and didn't they trade Bernardrick McKinney too?
To Miami? They got rid of McKinney for Shaq Lawson, I guess, kind of replace the pass rush of JJ Watt, but he's not nearly the player that Watt is.
Not even close. I am excited for Brandon Cooks, though. Maybe if he can, you know, that quarterback position or that quarterback situation isn't as bad, maybe he's salvageable in fantasy football. I think that's the best case scenario for
outside. I think if he's healthy, he's going to be a fantasy star, man. I think
really. I'm just concerned about that quarterback situation. I'm not high on Tyrod Taylor at all. So
no, me neither. Yeah, I think the quarterback situation is going to be a mess.
Yeah,
but you know, hey, somebody's got to catch balls, and they're going to probably be behind a lot. So
yeah,
Cooks is positioned to be that dude.
Well, you're right. Well, we'll see. We'll see. We won't be watching any of the Texans this year unless you know. It's dealing with the Titans and they need to beat an opponent, the Titans need to lose sort of situation. So we can talk about the Texans once and make it an afterthought, which is A-okay with me. Let's move on to the Jaguars. The Jaguars had a really, like I said, a really intriguing offseason. You know, they hire Urban Meyer, out of the dead, out of the coaching graveyard. They draft Trevor Lawrence and draft Travis Etienne, who was being tried at wide receiver a bit, I think at rookie mini camp and OTAs a bit. So that caused a bit of a stir. And they added a bunch of free agents that you really wouldn't expect to go to maybe a middling team like Jacksonville. They added Marvin Jones. They added a lot of pieces on the defensive side of the ball. Not household names, maybe some names you heard of before. What did you think of the Jaguars offseason? It was kind of random and kind of intriguing at the same time, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I feel like it was kind of up and down. Like, obviously, Trevor Lawrence was chiseled in stone, you know, by the time that the Jets lost that game or won that game. I can't remember who they beat. Was it the Rams? I think it was randomly out of nowhere. And the second they won that game, it was chiseled in stone. Mm-hmm. Trevor Lawrence was happening. So, you know, obviously he's coming in. A lot of people are looking at the Jags and trying to make them like a trendy pick to be, you know, the winner of the division or whatever. I just don't see it. If you look back, I pulled the last 20 first overall pick quarterbacks, and there's been a lot of them because, you know, most of the time the first overall pick is a quarterback. Mm-hmm. And one of them in the last 20 had a winning record as a rookie, and that was Andrew Luck. Uh-huh. And he was coming into a Colts team that was a lot more talented than what their record had been the previous year, because frankly, I mean, one, they were starting Curtis Painter, and Curtis Painter was not even a bad starting quarterback. He was a bad backup quarterback. So, I mean, there was that, and they were actually trying to lose over the entire back half of that season. So, short of Trevor Lawrence being Andrew Luck, which, I mean, sure, it's possible that he is, you know, a similar talent level. I think that's even, you know, something that you could say, yeah, he's probably pretty close from a pure talent standpoint. I just don't know that I would project them to make that kind of leap when The defense, again, just like Houston, defense was horrific last year. I don't know that I see anything that they did that makes me feel like they're going to be a lot better. They did go out and get Shaq Griffin, who helps them at one of their corner spots. Obviously, they're hoping C.J. Henderson plays better this year than he did last year. But last year, he was kind of a disappointment for them after being a high pick in the first round. So I think the defense is going to be bad again. And, you know, the offense, they've got some parts and pieces. Like, you like DJ Shark, you like Laviska Shenault, you like Marvin Jones. Like, they've got a nice little wide receiver core. Offensive line is solid, not spectacular, but it's it's actually pretty solid. They've got some running backs now with ETN and then James Robinson, obviously. And so there's some parts and pieces. I think their offense could be pretty formidable if Trevor Lawrence steps in and plays well from day one. But again, even really good rookie quarterbacks often struggle, you know, at the outset of their rookie year. It's just, you just don't see rookie quarterbacks come in and light the league on fire very often. That's just rare. So we'll see. We'll see what Jacksonville looks like offensively. And then you've also got the wild card factor of the coaching staff. I mean, Urban Meyer, you know, his whole college career was great, but this is a different level. And it's a totally different ball game. And we've seen other college coaches struggle with the transition, even really good ones. I'm not totally crazy about his coordinator hires with, you know, Daryl Bevel and Joe Cullen on the offensive and defensive side. I just don't know that that's a huge I don't know that that's a plus for them either. So, yeah, they're going to be one of the more interesting teams to watch. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they jumped up to like 7 or maybe even 8 wins, like right around just fighting to get to 500 somewhere around there. I could see them getting to that point if Lawrence is great. But if Lawrence struggles a little bit, I think they're going to be right back down in that, you know, 3-4 win range like they have been for most of the past decade.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the offense could be really good. Well, not really good, but it could be formidable. Just looking through their depth chart, I mean, there's some solid starters and they got some depth there. So, I don't know. It's just it's a flip of the coin with the Jaguars. And like you said, either they're going to be really like intriguing and, you know, exciting at times, or they're going to be really bad like they have the past couple of years. So we'll see about the Jags. That's a team I would probably want to be keeping an eye on, maybe, you know, checking in on the score during the Sunday. So we'll see about the Jags. I'm a little bit intrigued by them, but let's move on to the biggest competition for the Titans in the AFC South. And just one of two teams basically in realistic competition and for the AFC South period, which is the Indianapolis Colts. Indianapolis Colts came into this, you know, offseason with a lot of cap. Like Chris Ben, you know, in general, Chris Ballard style, they didn't spend a lot of money. But what they did do was trade for Carson Wentz, who had a horrible, horrible, forgetful season in Philadelphia last year and took on a crap ton of his salary, traded some picks for him. Now they're banking on Frank Reich being the savior, for Carson Wentz's career and hopefully, revitalizing his career and bringing him back to the point where he was in 2017 when he was arguably a front runner for the MVP award. So what did you think of the Colts offense, or excuse me, not offense, offseason this year? And are you a buyer on the whole Frank Reich, Carson Wentz revitalization train?
I mean, I guess I can understand the logic behind it, right? I mean, the coach quarterback relationship is pretty important. I think Reich definitely knows how to work with Carson. And if you look at, or if you kind of read some of the stuff that happened behind the scenes and has since been reported in Philadelphia, it sounds like the relationship between Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz really deteriorated over the last, you know, couple years here. So that could be a part of, you know, why his play turned so poor. And you know, that I think that's probably part of it. However, I also think part of it is the fact that he's been hurt a lot in his young career. And we've seen that up close and personal with Marcus Mariota in Nashville. And sometimes injuries just get in a guy's head. Like, I can't explain it, But it's just, you know, sometimes a guy gets hurt too many times and the confidence just falls. They don't have the confidence that their offensive line is going to protect them. They don't have the confidence that they can step into their throws and not have to worry about it. And I feel like sometimes once that kind of, you know, there's that mental break of, you know, just not feeling comfortable in an NFL pocket anymore, it's hard to get that back. And Wentz to me looked like a guy that was scared in the pocket last year. And that is really tough to come back from. Even if you put him behind a good offensive line, even if you put him with a coach that he's familiar with in a new city and all that stuff, I think they were the best chance to revive Carson Wentz. So if it's going to happen, then I think, you know, this is the best chance that he'll get. But I guess I'm not a big believer that he's going to go straight back to MVP form. I think at best he'll fall somewhere in between and probably be kind of a run of the mill mediocre NFL starter at, you know, best case scenario. Worst case scenario, he continues to be one of the worst starters in the NFL last year, because he was a train wreck last year. Like, I cannot emphasize how bad he was. And it's just hard for me to see a guy looking that bad to looking, you know, MVP good 1 year later. I just don't buy that, you know, abrupt change of direction for his career. So,
yeah, I'll admit, when I was still in high school, you know, what was it? He was his MVP year. It was like 2017. I was still in high school. I was 17 years old. Gosh, that makes me feel old, but I was 17 years old, still in high school. And I was watching the Eagles. I fell in love with watching the Eagles because I love big market teams like that happen bad to do good, quickly. Because I don't know, it's just the whole vibe of having a big market team being so successful. It makes me feel good. I love watching that. So when I saw, you know, I was watching Carson Wentz, I love watching the guy play. Love watching him play. And it was kind of hard to watch, you know, the guy, you know, look like crap, you know, those years after that injury. Now he's over in Indianapolis, and now he's just you're just banking, like you said, banking on Frank Reich. To bring Carson Wentz back to that 2017 form, and there's just so many things wrong with, you know, his game right now. And you said injuries getting your head, messes with your mechanics, messes with your footwork, messes with your game, period. So we'll see. I know the Colts better be praying to God that they end up, you know, seeing the good side of Carson Wentz, because the Colts, they've had a bunch of cap room, you know, the past couple of years, and they've opted not to spend it. They're in the middle of a weird, you know, not a weird, but they're in the middle of a little bit of a contention window. Wentz doesn't pan out. A lot of their guys are going to be due for extension soon too. Darius Leonard is going to be due for one. So Colts better be praying and hoping that Carson Wentz gets his act together, because I would hate to see the Colts, you know, waste the hearsay cheap, what's the one I'm looking for? Cheap, team built, whatever, man, cheap roster, that's built with a contender. So
yeah,
that's the model that a lot of teams build your team around a lot of young talent, young, cheap talent, and get some veterans around and try to contend and hope that you can build on that success. Add some pieces along the way and maybe get a Super Bowl after that. So the Colts have the defense, their offense and quarterbacks, just the one big thing that's stopping anybody from putting the Colts, you know, in that upper echelon of teams, you know, with Kansas City, Buffalo, and maybe Baltimore and maybe Cleveland as well. So Colts better be praying to God because it's going to be hard to, you know, sell the whole process of getting another veteran quarterback if they choose to go down that route, or drafting another rookie and placing him behind the offensive line and throwing him into the fire and trying to see if he can, you know, at least aid the team in their road with contention. So we'll see. Yeah.
And I'm interested to see how Eric Fisher does too, because he's coming off that Achilles injury. And really, if you look at the Colts last year when Costanzo was out, they struggled big time. I mean, they were, I think, like 2-4 in games that Costanzo did not play or maybe didn't finish too. So they really struggled without their star left tackle in the lineup. And, of course, he retired, and they went out to go get Eric Fisher. But Fisher, I don't know if he's going to be ready to start the year. It sounds like maybe he will be. They're being pretty aggressive with his recovery timeline because he just tore that Achilles in late January.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, usually that's a longer term injury. But I'll be very interested to see how he plays when he does come back, because if he struggles at left tackle, that really changes the complexion for them, because that offensive line, they're really good, you know. You know, Quentin Nelson, Ryan Kelly is really good. Braden Smith at right tackle, he's really good too. You know, the right guard's okay. He's fine. Glowinski's, you know, been there for a while. He's passable. But that left tackle spot's, you know, so critical. And if they've got a weakness there, that can really change the way that offensive line looks, you know, game to game. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how his recovery tracks with the start of the season, because he's a key piece for them.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I'm still 21 years old. I'm still young. But even I know that the whole recovery timeline for serious Achilles injuries, you know, range more than what the months of January to the start of season in September. So,
yeah, eight months would be a pretty crazy recovery time for Achilles. But
yeah, and if he's still able to retain the athleticism that, you know, that player has before that torn Achilles, because if you don't know, Achilles injuries can absolutely destroy your athleticism. I mean, you can look at football, you can look at basketball. One, you know, recent example that, you know, I saw that an Achilles injury completely destroyed a guy's career was, if you know this name, DeMarcus Cousins, he plays in the NBA. Was a crazy all-star for years, ruptured his Achilles, and has not even looked close to the same since. So those Achilles injuries are really serious, and they're really tricky injuries to maneuver around. So we'll see with that. I hope for his sake that he retains the athleticism, returns to the player that he was, because before the injury, Eric Fisher wasn't, you know, maybe one of the more elite left tackles in the league, but he was still a good left tackle and one that the Chiefs depended on a lot. So we'll see. For his sake, I hope he gets his athleticism back. So we can move on from the Colts now. Although I would love to talk a little bit more about the Colts. We can't leave. We got to save some more time for the Tennessee Titans, the team that me and you both talk about on a daily basis. So, I'll let you have the floor with this. I won't talk too much about the Tennessee Titans offseason. So what did you think about this Tennessee Titans offseason? And there was really maybe one thing that you sort of maybe would have wished the Titans to do in the offseason, you know, aside from the things that they've already done. What would it be?
You know, obviously, I think the Julio move changes a lot of the complexion of the Titans offseason to me, because, I mean, you go from, all right, what are they going to do at wide receiver besides A.J. Brown to, you know, they might have the best wide receiver tandem in the league all of a sudden, like overnight. You know, that makes a huge difference. And I know Julio's 32. I know he's coming off a season where he had some injury issues and stuff like that. But to me, you know, it's a risk worth taking for this team. And you know, if he stays healthy and plays like he's capable of, I don't know how you stop the offensive weapons that the Titans have. And their offensive line is really solid. You know, even I would say probably a top 10, top 5, maybe even unit when they're all healthy. And obviously Taylor Lewan coming back is a big deal for this group after being out with an ACL most of last season. But yeah, I think the offense to me is the certainty. Like the offense is going to be good. There's no way you can have that much talent on that side of the ball and not be good, barring just a crazy rash of injuries. And they were a top 5 offense basically ever since Ryan Tannehill took over at quarterback. I mean, consistently, you know, in 2019, they were top 5 under him, and 2020, they were top 5 under him. So we're getting a pretty big sample size with them being on the lead offense with him at quarterback. So I really think, you know, I'm confident this is going to be a top five offense. And that's going to put them probably in the playoffs, barring something really crazy happening. Because the defense could be bad, right? And I said this earlier on Twitter, actually. I don't know how anybody has any confidence whatsoever in projecting what this Titans defense is, whether it's good or bad, whether it's positive or negative. Like, you can say, look at what the defense was last year. They were terrible. They're going to be terrible again. But, I mean, they've got six new starters. They've literally changed over more than half of the starters on that side of the ball. They added Bud Dupree. They added DeNico Autry, Janoris Jenkins, Caleb Farley. Imani Hooker's elevated into a starting role now. Christian Fulton's probably going to be a starter. They've got Elijah Molden in the mix in the secondary. They've added a ton of pieces on this side of the ball. And before the Julio trade, this is where they'd spent almost all of their resources, right? They really worked on just totally rebuilding this defense. And, you know, they formally promoted Shane Bowen to defensive coordinator. You would hope that he gets a little bit better in year two than he was in year one, when he was still really technically just the outside linebackers coach, but also calling plays. And there seemed to be some confusion there about roles and titles and all that stuff. So they cleaned some of that up. They brought in Jim Schwartz to help out too. There's a path where this defense ends up being really good. I mean, if Dupree ends up being the guy that they think he was and that they spent all that money for, and he goes and gets 10 sacks like he has the last couple years in Pittsburgh, and, you know, he helps Landry out, balance out that pass rush. And then the secondary with, you know, if Farley's healthy and plays like the top 10 talent that everyone said he was before the back surgery, you know, Jenkins is going to be solid. I have very little concern about him. Mm-hmm. And then Christian Fulton, I think, is a big wild card, because if Fulton turns out to be the guy that a lot of people thought was going to be a first round pick in 2020, if he turns out to be anywhere close to that good, all of a sudden you could see a secondary that's really good on paper and could really be one of the top units in the league, but they're all unknown and they've never really played together. So the range of outcomes for the Titans defense is so extremely vast that I could see them being anywhere from like top five, top 10, if everybody hits and they get like the boost of talent that they think they're getting from Dupree and Autry and Farley and Jenkins and all these guys. Or I could see them being bottom five again and you know, just all the changes didn't really matter because the defensive coaching still wasn't very good. And the guys that they, you know, brought in either couldn't get healthy or just didn't perform like they thought they would. There's a huge range of outcomes on the defense. And I think that, to me, if they were going to continue to add, that's where you go, is you go get another pass rusher like a Melvin Ingram or a Justin Houston, and you throw them in the mix. Because, I mean, Dupree is a good player. Landry is a good player. Weaver, I like as a prospect, but you don't know what you're going to get out of him as a rookie. Mm-hmm. But then right after that, you're back down to the Derek Robersons and the Wyatt Rays and the guys that, you know, weren't getting it done last year. So I think if you go get one more pass rusher, you start to feel a little bit better about, all right, we've got some different stuff we can throw at teams up front. We've got some guys that can win one-on-one battles up front. Mm-hmm. And now we can go get the passer and help those young corners behind us, you know, to put them in a position to be able to make some plays and stuff like that. So all of that stuff is complimentary, but yeah, the defense, I just don't know what to expect. If the defense is good, I think this team's a Super Bowl contender. If the defense is bad again, they're probably still a borderline playoff team, but you know, it's every game's going to be, you know, 38 to 35. It's just going to be shootout. So, it's going to be interesting to see what happens on that side of the ball, because I think the Julio move turns all eyes back to the defense now.
Yeah, 100%. And it's just like you said, the range of outcomes for this Titans defense so vast, and some people might think you're overreacting, but in reality, that's truly the case, because the defense was, and if you did watch the Titans defense last year, if you didn't watch the Titans defense last year, I think it's safe to say that you wouldn't have been impressed at all. you know, if you were watching this defense, the defense was horrible last year. Really, really bad. They weren't, you know, all that good on first and second down. And even when they got into favorable positions on third down, they just couldn't get off the field. And teams just continue to drive on them time and time again, week after week. And it just never got better, you know, throughout the season. I mean, the best performance that unit had was in the playoffs against Baltimore, you know, all year. The offense just didn't show up. But it was just a weird, horrible, you know, season for that unit last year. You know, you have all these moving parts with the new starters in the secondary, new additions on the defensive line. It's the whole issue with continuity is one that's warranted to be brought up as well. I guess the linebacking core probably is the one that didn't have, you know, the most amount of change. You know, they brought Jayon Brown back. Rashawn Evans is still there, but I don't think either of us are all that high on Rashawn Evans anyways, you know, based on the play that he had the last couple of years. So that's why they drafted Monty Rice, maybe rookie out of Georgia, maybe as a Rashawn Evans replacement. So we'll see. Like, that's all we can say right now is we'll see, because there's just no guarantees with this defense right now with the way they played last year and all the craziness and unknown and uncertainty surrounding the defensive coaching with Shane Bowen, Mike Vrabel, and now they added Jim Schwartz. So we'll see. That's all we can say about this defense right now. We will see how it plays as the season kicks off a couple more months in September. So before we get out of here, Mike, I wanted to maybe power rank this division a little bit. I think we have a good idea about who the 3-4 teams, you know, in the division, you know, in terms of power rankings are. But I guess, you know, a lot of people have been throwing the Colts and Titans back and forth between 1 and 2, you know, who's the best team in the division, who would you pick? So if you would, you know, give me your power rankings for this AFC South division, and then we can get out of here.
Yeah, so for me, you know, I think it's Titans 1, Colts 2, Jags 3, Texans 4. I honestly think it's fairly cut and dry in that order, because while the Colts have the best defense in the division, I don't think there's any doubt about that. But they did lose some pieces, right? I mean, they lost Danico Autry. They lost Justin Houston. Those guys provided, you know, 16, 17 sacks for them last year. You know, yes, DeForest Buckner's a beast. Yes, they drafted Kwity Paye. So they are going in a different direction with that front, but we'll see how that all works out. Like, they've had some changes there. And then I still have some questions. You know, Rocky Sin, I don't think is a very good cornerback. Xavier Rhodes was great last year, but can he do it again? I mean, he's getting a little old, a little long in the tooth. Is he going to be able to hold up against a team like, say, the Titans, who can throw AJ Brown and Julio Jones at him? Mm-hmm. So I think it's, you know, the Colts have the best defense in the division, but they still have some questions on that side of the ball. And then on offense, the offense is a massive question. You know, I feel pretty good, like I said earlier, about the offensive line. And I think Jonathan Taylor is a good running back. I think they're going to have a good running game. But I don't know about their weapons outside the pass catchers. And I don't know about Carson Wentz. And I don't know about their left tackle either. So I think there's enough questions on that side of the ball. And to me, you know, if the Titans clearly have the better offense and the Colts clearly have the better defense, in the modern NFL, I'm going with the better offense over the better defense all 10 times out of 10. It's an offense-driven league, and more often than not, that's the consistent side of the ball, and the defense can kind of be up and down, even the good ones. So, to me, I think it's Titans 1, Colts 2, Jags 3, and then Texans distant fourth down there.
Yeah, I think I'll roll with you on the whole power ranking system of the AFC South. You know, until we see some sort of proof that Frank Reich is the magic, you know, and the key for the revival of Carson Wentz's career, it's going to be hard to put the Colts above the Titans. You just added, you know, one of the best wide receivers in the NFL currently. So I'll roll with you on that same order for power rankings in the AFC South. Thank you, Mike, for coming on here. It was a short, you know, sort of little review of the AFC South and the off seasons that they all had. I just wanted to get some things going on the AFC South just because of the addition of Julio Jones. So I really appreciate you coming on here. Before we get out of here, I want to give you a chance, you know, plug your stuff where people can find your work, find you on Twitter. Not that this amateur podcast is pluggy opportunity really matters for you, but if you would, go ahead and do it anyways.
No, absolutely. Yeah, come find me on Twitter at Mike Miracles. And then, of course, everything I write goes over at BroadwaySportsMedia.com. You can follow the site at BroadwayTN on Twitter and all the other social stuff. I don't really do much on Instagram, but at Mike Miracles on Instagram. And then that's about it. Football and Other F Words podcast that we do as well. And you can check them out at F Words Pod on Twitter. So come find me, talk some ball.
All right, sounds good. Once again, thank you, Mike, for coming on. Enzo Podcast will be back on Sunday, I believe. We're starting some fantasy stuff, which I'm kind of excited to do. Actually, not kind of. I'm really excited to do the fantasy stuff. That's always intriguing to me. So back on Sunday. That's the plan until further notice. So keep your eye on that. Follow the End Zone Pod on Twitter. You know, find the End Zone Pod wherever you listen to your podcast, Spotify, iTunes, or podcast, Apple Podcasts, iTunes. What, somebody told me those two are the exact same, so, but I'll just say it separately since I don't really care. So find the End Zone Podcast there. Like, share, please share it to everybody you know. Me and Eric will really appreciate the exposure. So once again, Mike, thank you for coming on here. And we will see you guys back here on Sunday. Peace out and have a blessed day, night, whichever time you're listening to this. So peace out.